Sometimes at night, when she couldn't go to sleep, Mrs. Turpin would occupy herself with the question of who she would have chosen to be if she couldn't have been herself. If Jesus had said to her before he made her, "There's only two places available for you. You can either be a Negro or white trash," what would she have said? "Please, Jesus, please," she would have said, "just let me wait until there's another place available." And he would have said, "No, you have to go right now. And I have only these two places, so make up your mind." She would have wiggled and squirmed and begged and pleaded, but it would have been no use, and finally she would have said, "All right, make me a Negro then, but that don't mean a trashy one." And he would have made her a neat, clean, respectable Negro woman, herself, but black. Next to the child's mother was a red-headed, youngish woman reading one of the magazines and working a piece of chewing gum, hell for leather, as Claude would say. Mrs. Turpin could not see the woman's feet. She was not white trash, just common. Sometimes Mrs. Turpin occupied herself at night naming the classes of people. On the bottom of the heap were most colored people, not the kind she would have been if she had been one, but most of them. Then next to them, not above, just away from, were the white trash. And above them were the homeowners. And above them, the home and landowners to which she and Claude belonged. Above she and Claude were people with a lot of money and much bigger houses and much more land. But here, the complexity of it would begin to bear in on her, for some of the people with a lot of money were common and ought to be below she and Claude, and some of the people who had got good blood had lost their money and had to rent. And then there were colored people who owned their own homes and land as well. There was a colored dentist in town who had two red Lincolns and a swimming pool and a farm with registered white-faced cattle on it. Usually, by the time she'd fallen asleep, all the classes of people were moiling and roiling in her head, and she would dream they were all crammed in together in a boxcar being ridden off to be put in a gas oven. Well, hello and welcome back to From the Center, the podcast of the Center for Western Studies. We've been on a kick with Flannery O'Connor last week, and this week we want to read another of her stories. Ben, glad to have you back with me.
Great to be back here.
You're a brave fellow to take on Flannery with me again.
This has been fascinating.
It's interesting stuff, isn't it?
It's very interesting.
Wow. I thought we'd take a look at the story Revelation.
Yep.
It's another of her shocking stories.
Yes.
Slightly different than Greenleaf.
There seems to be more redemption and more clarity in it.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. The shocking part doesn't come at the end in this story. It kind of comes in the middle or toward the end, anyway. Let's talk about the story. We've got a Mrs. Turpin, who is described as a fairly heavyweight woman.
She's a large woman.
Large woman. And she and her husband, Claude, have gone into the waiting room of a doctor's office. Seems Claude has an injury on his leg.
He's been kicked by a cow.
It was kicked by a cow. So these two run a farm. They've got, we find out later, they've got cows and pigs and hogs and
Some cotton,
that's right. They have to be diverse, they said. Diversify, yep. Better than have all cotton or, you know. And then we get to meet the other people in the waiting room.
We have an eclectic bunch. Yes, we meet them through Mrs. Turpin's eyes.
Right. What struck you about them? Did you remember any in particular?
Well, everybody is thoroughly judged.
Oh my goodness, yes.
And belonging to some lower social class. Or if they're agreeable with Mrs. Turpin, then they're good people.
Kind of her class.
Yeah, of her class.
On her level.
Which, yes.
Right.
Yes. There's a strong sense of the social ladder and who is where and what their clothes and their shoes tell about them.
Yeah, she describes those at length, doesn't she? Yes. She likes to look at people's shoes, see what they're looking like. And seems like there was one woman that's described as a pleasant-looking lady, somewhat yep. well-dressed, that's I the guess.
Stylish lady.
Stylish right? lady, exactly. But then there's a white trash lady, and there's a mother with a sort of surly child, and then there's another mother with a teenager, maybe, that's studying a book.
Who's reading the book.
Reading yeah. a book, yeah. And seems like the strange thing is that as she's quietly judging everybody, this teenager reading the book gets increasingly angry. Looks at her with daggers a few times and
scowling at her, starts to make sort of grimacing faces at her.
Yes,
that Mrs. Turpin is absolutely shocked.
Yes,
does she know me?
Yeah, she doesn't know me. How could she be hating me so much?
How could she? Yeah,
yeah. It's a very strange situation, and doesn't seem like she's done anything that should make this teenage girl so angry, but she's reading her book and she viciously slams the book shut a couple of times and just doesn't approve of what's going on around her. Well, eventually we get to the the point where the girl attacks Mrs. Turpin just out of the blue.
Yep.
There's a great little moment described here. I love the way Flannery does this, where she tells about the book the girl throwing a book at her.
Mrs. Turpin is busy thanking Jesus that he's made her who she is and not like these other people.
Oh man, let's read that part. That's and really then, good. Let's see, what page is that on?
499 in.
Ah, there we go. Okay, right. All right. Along the way, maybe before we get to that, along the way, there's what she calls a white trash woman in there yep. who seems to disagree with her about things. She says that she has hogs, you know.
Yes, but she's got a different idea of what to do and not to do with hogs.
Right. The white trash one says something like, I'd never have hogs. I'd never squirt down hogs with a yeah. hose or any of that. They're so awful. They're grunting and mm-hmm. rooting and everything. So the implication is that, you know, you're beneath me because you have hogs.
You have hogs and I wouldn't.
And I wouldn't have hogs.
Yeah.
But she, in her eyes, is a white trash, which is a lower class in her mind.
Yeah.
So you have that going on already. So that's kind of disconcerting. But then she says, let's see where we can start here. Okay. Well, just before the book, it says, if it's one thing I am, Mrs. Turpin said with feeling, it's grateful. When I think of all I could have been besides myself and what all I got, a little of everything, and a good disposition besides.
Charming lady.
Lovely. I just feel like shouting. Thank you, Jesus, for making everything the way it is. It could have been different. For one thing, somebody else could have got Claude, her husband. At the thought of this, she was flooded with gratitude, and a terrible pang of joy ran through her. Oh, thank you, Jesus. Jesus, thank you, she cried aloud. And the next line is, the book struck her directly over the left eye.
It's fantastic.
Struck almost at the same instant that she realized the girl was about to hurl it. Before she could utter a sound, the raw face, that is the pockmarked face of this teenage girl, came crashing across the table toward her, howling. The girl's fingers sank like clamps into the soft flesh of her neck. She heard the mother cry out and Claude shout, "Whoa!" There was an instant where she was certain that she was about to be in an earthquake. This girl threw her textbook across the room at her.
At her head.
At her head, hit her square above the eye.
Good aim.
And then came flying across the table to attack her. And the strange bit is she believes a little later that
what does the girl say to her?
Yeah. She says later about him at page 500, it says the girl, she seems to think that the girl has some sort of prophecy to tell her. What does she say?
What's the message?
What you got to say to me? Yeah, there you go. She asked hoarsely and held her breath, waiting for a revelation. Here's the revelation. The girl raised her head, her gaze locked with Mrs. Turpin's. Go back to hell where you came from, you old warthog.
It's a good message.
She whispered it, too. She whispered it. I love that. Go back to hell where you came from, you old warthog, she whispered. Her voice was low but clear. Her eyes burned for a moment as if she saw with pleasure that her message had struck its target. What an amazing moment. What did you think when you heard about that, when you read that?
Well, It comes out of the blue,
doesn't it?
Like a lightning bolt.
Yeah,
it's good fun. Loved how everything that has been going on that's so mean spirited. The conversations they're having in the waiting room, and the judgment, and the girl who's there who starts to notice Mrs. Turpin and then starts to fixate on her and then won't stop and is she's reacting to Mrs. Turpin as if she is reading her mind.
Mm-hmm.
As if she's not just hearing the conversation, but as if she has access to Miss Turpin's quote-unquote good disposition and the way she is going through judging everybody in her own... In her own head.
She seems to know that, even though most of it's narration and not spoken, isn't it, from Mrs. Turpin?
There's little bits of spoken, but then most of the comments on various people and how far beneath Mrs. Turpin they are her internal narration.
Right, but this girl seems to be able to read that.
She seems to be reacting to that rather than to what's being spoken.
I love that moment. I just think that's a wonderful Flannery moment, and it makes it all the funnier if you remember what the name of the book is. Do you remember?
Yes, Human Development.
Human Development.
Yeah.
That's what it's good for. It's a college textbook. You can imagine the size of a college psychology book, you know.
It's a big one.
Massive book. But it's called Human Development. That's I think she's got a great sense of humor. That's how you develop humans. Hit them in the head with a book.
Yeah.
And call them warthogs from hell.
And that's, of course, what happens. And I would say that's where this story takes an unexpected turn. Because we've got the waiting room, we've got Mrs. Turpin, we've got the people, and we've got her very sort of unconsidered, deep consideration of other people.
Right.
It's never occurred to her that she's anything but a good woman. Thank you, Jesus, for making me as I am.
Oh, my. Says. It's amazing. Well, what happens after that? They leave the doctor's office after Claude gets looked at, I guess.
They leave and they go home and Claude is sleeping and she can't stop thinking and turning this thing over and over in her
really
mind.
Really stung her, didn't it?
But she's hurt by it and she's offended, but she's not offended. Like it isn't, she's not being defensively proud about it. I mean, she is, but she's also, she genuinely takes it as a message
mm-hmm.
for her from God.
Mm-hmm.
She assumes from the way that the girl looked at her, she assumes from the way that she feels about what she's heard, that as offensive as it is, that it is actually something God is telling her. And she wrestles with it and she hates it, but she won't let it go.
Mrs. May in the other book can't seem to hear or see whatever it is that's being told to her.
Yes.
Short of the bull actually goring her to death.
Yeah, it's something from the outside comes in and has to force it. But with Mrs. May, that's the end of her life.
Yeah.
With Mrs. Turpin, although she has a vision of the end of her life,
mm-hmm.
it's quite different. And she's having that vision now.
Right. And I wonder if maybe that vision isn't given to her partly because of her willingness to hear the message that this girl has, this horrible girl has. She even, the girl, by the way, I think gets taken off to a mental institution.
But the interesting thing is that the girl is grimacing and ugly and kind of frenzied eyed, or described to her by Mrs. Turpin, right up until she has hurled the book, and then she calms right down. Her eyes are clear.
Yeah.
And she just calmly delivers her message to Mrs.
Whispers
Turpin.
It to her, yeah.
Yep.
That's interesting.
It's no longer a frenzy.
Yeah, that's interesting. But she's almost like a banshee or a demon or something up until that point, though.
Yeah.
You know, looking and darting, eyes burning and grabbing her throat. I mean, she comes across the table and grabs her by the throat.
Right at her.
Yeah. Unbelievable. But then there's another kind of revelation at the end, isn't it? And that's the one we should talk about now. She's back home again, and she is out. She takes the hose from her husband.
She's gone out to see the hogs.
To deal with the hogs.
Because that's the part that gets her.
Uh-huh.
Are you calling me? Because the girl calls her a warthog from hell.
Yeah.
So she has to know, what am I, a hog? I'm not a hog. What is there about me that you would call me that?
Right. And she seems to be, she's talking to herself or talking to God.
She seems very clearly to be talking to God.
Yeah. Is this the message you want me to get, mm-hmm. kind of thing? Right. And she's resistant to it, but not, I mean, she's asking questions about it.
Go on, she yelled, call me a hog. Call me a hog again from hell. Call me a warthog from hell. Put that bottom rail on top. There'll still be a top and bottom.
That's an interesting thought.
Isn't that just
the last shall be first, and the
yes, exactly.
That's there, but also about the idea of ordering. Yeah, yep. Right. Put me in that bottom rail now, but there'll still be a top rail. The system is still there.
That's right. You can't upset the system. Yeah. A garbled echo returned to her, and a final surge of fury shook her, and she roared, "Who do you think you are?"
Wow, what a great line. And then it says, the question carried over the pasture and across the highway and the cotton field and returned to her like an echo, clearly like an answer from beyond the wood, as though God is asking, who do you think you are? Yeah.
And she opened her mouth, but no sound came out of it.
Love it.
She has no answer.
Yeah. It reminds me of Job kind of shaking his fist at God and saying, you know, mm-hmm. why have you treated me this way? And God says, remind me again who you are.
Yeah.
You know, were you there when I made the world? Is that right?
Yeah.
You know.
And Orwell, when she reads her complaint to the gods, until we have faces.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a very similar thing.
Yeah. We shake our fists at God and say, you know, who do you think you are messing with me this way?
Yeah.
And it's the very question that he's asking us.
To have asked the question is to be answered.
Uh-huh. That's wonderful.
But it doesn't end.
No, it doesn't at end that just point. There. Right.
It, and I think it could.
Uh-huh.
And that would be a different kind of story.
Mm.
But Mrs. Turpin stays there and she doesn't reject that question returning to her,
mm-hmm.
but she sits with it. And then do you want to read the last vision?
Yeah, let's do that. Even the description of her sitting there and listening is very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
She waited until it had had time to turn into their... Oh, sorry. Mrs. Turpin stood there, her gaze fixed on the highway, all her muscles rigid, until in 5 or 6 minutes the truck reappeared, returning. That's the truck that Claude took the workers back home in, and now he's coming back to home. She waited until it had time to turn into their own road. Then, like a monumental statue coming to life, she bent her head slowly and gazed as if through the very heart of mystery. Down into the pig parlor at the Hogs. All this time she's been saying, I'm a great person because I have hogs. I've got diversity in my farm, you know, and so on. And the white trash lady said, I wouldn't have hogs. Mm-hmm. Good grief. So now she's thinking, looking into the heart of mystery, down into the pig parlor with the hogs, at the Hogs. They had settled all in one corner around the old sow, who was grunting softly. A red glow suffused them. They appeared to pant with a secret life. Maybe life is in the Hogs. Maybe, you know, maybe the lowest is the place where you find life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Until the sun slipped finally behind the tree line, things are getting darker. Mrs. Turpin remained there with her gaze bent to them as if she were absorbing some abysmal life-giving knowledge. At last she lifted her head. There was only a purple streak in the sky cutting through a field of crimson and leading like an extension of the highway into the descending dusk. She raised her hands from the side of the pen in a gesture hieratic and profound. A visionary light settled in her eyes. So she's getting another vision. She saw the streak as a vast swinging bridge extending upward from the earth through a field of living fire. Upon it, a vast horde of souls were rumbling toward heaven. There were whole companies of white trash, clean for the first time in their lives, and bands of black Negroes in white robes, and battalions of freaks and lunatics shouting and clapping and leaping like frogs. And bringing up the end of the procession was a tribe of people whom she recognized at once as those who, like herself and Claude, had always had a little of everything and the God-given wit to use it right. She leaned forward to observe them closer. They were marching behind the others with great dignity, accountable as they had always been for good order and common sense and respectable behavior. They alone were on key. Yet she could see by their shocked and altered faces that even their virtues were being burned away. She lowered her hands and gripped the rail of the hog pen, her eyes small, but fixed unblinkingly on what lay ahead. In a moment, the vision faded, but she remained where she was, immobile. At length, she got down, turned off the faucet, and made her slow way on the darkening path to the house. In the woods around her, the invisible cricket choruses had struck up, but what she heard were the voices of the souls climbing upward into the starry field and shouting, Hallelujah. So maybe we have a story with two revelations. Maybe there's a brick thrown at her, book thrown at her that helps her see something that God wants to tell her. And then maybe this vision at the end.
This deeper truth
is
coming. Okay.
Yeah. Had to get her attention first.
And it certainly did. Yes. Yeah. The first shot is you are not who you think you are.
Yeah. 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 The description at the end, though, is almost you are who you think you are, but it's nothing of importance. It's being burned away. Yes. What your virtues are being burned away.
The very characteristics that you count as holding you on a higher rank on the ladder.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are not gonna last.
Yeah. Yeah.
The well ordered and respectful and the outside appearance of dignity isn't actually what this is all about.
And this is the first time when reading this now, just now again, I realized that there's not just white trash and black people. There's the lunatics.
That's right. The freaks and the lunatics.
They come
the girl,
ahead of her.
They're still ahead.
That's what I'm thinking is the girl
people
is in
she's
that
been
group.
Judging in the doctor's office right. are ahead of her. And she's on her way too.
That's interesting, isn't it? She's being great? Condemned to no. hell. She's just not ahead of everybody
absolutely.
Else.
She's because it's worse than she would be rejected.
Yeah.
Her thing about she's always looked for the opportunity to help someone lesser than her.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And what she of course is realizing is that she's the lesser,
right?
She's the one who. The other people are helping.
And the lunatic helped her.
The lunatic may have saved her soul.
May have saved her soul with that yeah. book of human development.
Throwing the book in her face may be the thing that's going to gonna turn her life around.
I'm reminded of that parable that Jesus told about the tax collector and the Pharisee, you
yes.
know, and they both go to the temple to pray. And the tax collector says, I mean, the Pharisee says, I thank thee, O Lord, that I'm not like other people. Mm-hmm. I am above
the
these classes.
I,
yeah. I've done all these good things for other people. I've, you know, all the things that she claims that she is.
Yes.
And the tax collector doesn't brag at all and just beats his chest and says, have mercy on me, a sinner. And Jesus, of course, says it's the tax collector and not the Pharisee who's going to be seen as,
yes,
as acceptable to God.
This is the prayer that God is hearing.
That's yep. right. That's right. And there's other places where he says, I haven't come for the well. I've come for the sick,
yes.
right? And if you can't admit that you're sick, then I can't help you.
Mm-hmm.
So the person who is self-satisfied like that is the Pharisee, the one who is so grateful to God.
Yep.
Oh, I'm so glad you made me the way you did that I don't. You know, have yeah. to live like other people. You know,
I don't think it's an accident that the scene unravels in a doctor's waiting room.
Aha!
And she's
and
there.
She's not sick,
but she's not there for herself.
Good point.
She's not sick. Claude
right.
is sick. Claude
right.
needs help. She doesn't need help.
Right. Right.
But of course, she is in the doctor's waiting room, whether she realizes it or not,
mm.
and she is the patient,
mm-hmm.
which she does come to realize in the end.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If the doctor had thrown his book at her, maybe that would have been. But that's too on the nose, or
yes.
that's the wrong way to
no,
put
I,
it. It's
I
above
it's
the
great.
Left eye.
I think it's great that it's the lunatic.
Book. It's perfect that it's the one who she's been judging.
Yep.
That yeah, right. Yeah, that's a really good idea. The idea of applying this to our day today seems important to me, and I think it's tempting today to want to divide people up into classes and or genders or you know races, ethnic groups, whatever like that, and kind of pit mm-hmm. them against each other, which is a kind of a Marxist Phariseeism. It seems
yeah.
to me, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's like this the description of Mrs. Turpin staying up at night trying
yeah.
to divide everyone into the classes and. But as she falls asleep, they just come roiling together, and she
isn't
can't keep
that
them
interesting?
Apart anymore.
She can't keep
it's,
them.
Yeah.
There are exceptions to every rule kind of thing.
But she's trying real hard, and that's what she's got to do. She's got to separate and categorize and know where everyone is on the moral ladder.
Right, right, right. And it's great that she doesn't. It's kind of a sign that she has some insights that maybe Mrs. May didn't have, because she gets confused about it. Because it doesn't just settle that way.
Of course,
right?
Yeah.
But then she says, has that wonderful moment where she says, she imagines them all in a train car heading to the gas chamber.
Yeah.
I mean, gee whiz.
It's dark.
Yeah. But in a sense, aren't we without the Lord? Aren't we all kind of on a train car headed to hell? But I was thinking about, too, you know, how easy it is for us to sort of say, I thank thee, O God, that I'm not a capitalist, you know, or I thank thee, oh God, that I'm not a
cisgendered.
Exactly. Yeah. That I'm not. Oh yeah. Right. I'm so glad that I am not I thank thee, oh God, that I'm an American. Mm-hmm. I come from the greatest country in the world. You can play it either way. It's not like
imperialist
it's
imperialist or I'm
right. I can, or I'm our country is somehow better than everybody else's mm-hmm. country. Well, it's not genuine thankfulness. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Okay.
Gratitude is the sort of a signpost of a real Christian, I think. Somebody who's truly grateful for what God has given him.
Gratitude is
but that's
part
not the same
of
thing.
The coin of humility.
Right.
It's knowing that nothing has come from me.
Right.
Anything I have that's good has come from God.
But it's tempting, though, isn't it, to say not just that I've been given something good, but that I've been giving something better than somebody else.
Yes.
I'm a better person somehow because
it's zero-sum.
I have.
Again, it's all comparative
and
graded on a curve.
Right, right. The real danger is to compare ourselves to other people at all.
Yes.
You know, really to compare ourselves to the Lord is the only safe place to be.
The easiest danger, I think.
Yeah. It's very simple to fall into that, isn't it?
I don't know how to kind of make it stop sometimes.
Right.
Yeah, it seems constantly to be the default position of fallen myself.
Right.
It's so easy to always be comparing.
Right. And it's a very dangerous thing to do. I remember there's a proverb that really hit me early in my Christian walk that I've always sort of tried to live by, and that is that fear of man is a snare. Being afraid of the opinion of other people about you, or making mm-hmm. up opinions of yourself, but comparing yourself to the other person,
yes.
fearing that relationship, that comparison
is a trap.
Is a trap. Yeah. You don't want to go down that road. Yeah. You know, it's a safer thing, far better not to do that. And to see human beings made in the image of God. Mm-hmm. And there's that wonderful line in Lewis's Narnia books where, what does he say? Being a son of Adam or a daughter of Eve is both honor enough to raise the head of the lowest beggar and shame enough to lower the head of the greatest king.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think of that. That's really the way we should look at each other. Yeah. So be at peace where you are with what you've got. So gratitude is essential, but we can somehow pervert gratitude into this sort of virtue signaling.
Yeah.
You know, yep. I'm a better person
Very
than you
easily.
Are because I think I used this example once before, but I saw being sold a canvas shopping bag that mm-hmm. said on it, I'm a better person than you are because I use this bag, you know, and I thought, gee, that's it in a nutshell, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I'm sure they were being, you know, facetious when they made the thing. I hope they were anyway.
But it's
illuminating. But it speaks to the reality too closely, I'm afraid. So that's why another reason that I love this book, this Revelation book, because I think it brings that to the fore. It's not simply that you shouldn't be judging other people. It's that you shouldn't be, comparing yourself to other people at all. But the danger for Mrs. May was a victimhood. The danger for Mrs. Turpin was pride, I guess.
Mrs. Turpin thought that she was at the head of the procession.
Right.
And she's found out that she's at the tail.
Yeah.
And what a sharp and yet gentle revelation that is. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. what a comforting thing that, you know, child, you do get to come into the kingdom, mm-hmm. and we'll wait patiently for you to make it.
As the long lines of your betters.
As the long lines of your betters, yeah. All the lunatics and the, yeah.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. The white trash and the lunatics, yeah. And everybody. Yeah, that's a great picture.
Yeah, it's a lovely picture to invert the ladder of judgment.
Mm. The last shall be first.
Yeah.
Ben, I'm afraid that this idea of self-satisfaction is so ingrained in us that we all suffer with it to some degree. And especially I hear in discussions about economic disparity today, or racial conflict, you yeah. know, or men and women, conflict between men and women, mm-hmm. and so on. Each side is kind of taking up this idea that I thank thee, O God, that I'm not like the other person. You know, I'm either wealthy and I don't have to live in the poor kind of world, or we're trying to teach the oppressed person that he is so oppressed that he doesn't need to forgive. He deserves justice, you mm-hmm. know.
Yeah.
And a lot of times I think it encourages this very kind of Pharisaical notion on both sides, and we are so susceptible to it in our fallenness that we take to it pretty quickly, you know. If somebody gives me the yes. opportunity to be a victim, I take it, you know.
Yeah, I think this is like the other side of the coin. So Mrs. May is obviously judging everyone, but she is seeing herself as a
victim,
hardworking victim,
right.
And has been put upon, and she's very obviously bitter and mean.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs.
Mm-hmm.
Turpin isn't the same. She is the same, but she isn't the same. So she describes herself as having a good disposition, and in fact, right. other characters in the story do too.
Yeah.
That she's stout and laughs, and but she's just the same, separating herself from all of the rest of humanity, uh-huh. because she's judging everyone all the time, all around her.
Yeah. Yeah.
She doesn't have any sense that she is a person among other people who needs salvation.
Mm-hmm.
She's mm-hmm. already got it figured out.
Right. Right.
She's already got Jesus figured out, and she's already got everybody else figured out too.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a line that there was nothing you could tell her about anybody. She already knew it all.
Oh, yeah. Right. And that's a good distinction, I think, between the two women, because you're right. The Mrs. May is living in a fictional world altogether. She may be, they both are similar in the sense that they judge others and they call themselves better than the others, yep. you know. But Mrs. Turpin at least is willing to hear, you know, the revelation.
Yeah.
And Mrs. I think May,
Mrs. Like Turpin considers herself to be good and cheerful and helping people.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
she's able to see herself in those lights because she sees herself as above everybody else, mm. and therefore in a position to help them.
Mm.
And so the the bolt out of the blue that warns her
mm-hmm.
that is from hell comes as just as much of a shock as the bull
yes.
to Mrs. May.
It really is the same kind of out of the blue shock,
it
right?
It is. And you're it's the right. same.
And it's the same message in some ways.
It's the same juxtaposition of violence and tenderness.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And violence and revelation.
Yes.
Violence and discovery, as it's put in
discovery
Mrs. May.
And, yes, that's right.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah, I think that's not unlike Flannery's other stories. She
okay.
she uses a lot of violence to get something to happen. I remember reading in her her nonfiction book, Mystery and Manners, someone had asked her something about why she thought that she had to use such violence to get her points across, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she said something like, I'm misquoting her, but it's something like this, for a deaf world, you have to shout.
Okay.
So the idea is we're all sort of immune to revelation. We're not hearing things. We can't. Our ears are stopped.
We're just carrying on. Yeah, we're too busy talking to listen.
Has to be a big, you know, 2x4 to the head kind of thing to get our attention. And I think there's something to that. And of course, she was writing these back in the 30s, you know. Okay. Imagine how things are 100 years later now, 90 years later. Right. Well, there you have it. That's another of her fabulous stories.
This has been a really good one. I enjoyed this as a companion.
Right. They're good to go together. I think you're right.
Very much so.
Yeah. So last week's and this week's. Well, very good. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. We are the Center for Western Studies. If you're interested in knowing more about what we do, you can look us up on the website, centerws.com, or drop me an email at director@centerws.com, and we'd be glad to talk about your ideas online. Ben, thanks again. Good to talk to you. Next time, we'll move on to... I don't know who we'll move on to yet. We'll see.
We've got to find another book. About that.
Yeah, yeah. Eventually, I think we'd like to talk about Lewis's Till We Have Faces.
Yeah.
So if you like that book, keep an eye out for that one. It'll come in the next few weeks as we put that together. All right. God bless everybody. We'll see you again next time.
Take care.